Heiser or something, I suppose. Yeah, well, that I have a hard time believing that the Illinois Supreme Court is going to uphold that, but something tells me.
Belton,
yeah, well, that's, yeah. If he's asked for an injunction, but, yeah.
Okay. All right.
We shall.
Yeah.
All right, good morning. We have a work session scheduled today for the MDU electric rate increase application, and this is the first opportunity the commission has had to discuss the case. All of the briefs and reply briefs have been submitted, and we'll have a chance to chat about it this morning. We've got all the commission here. This is Tony Clark. For those who might be listening on the internet, myself, Commissioners Kalk and Kramer are here. We have Public Service Commission staff, as well as some representatives from MDU in the room. And again, for those who may be in the room or listening in, this is just an opportunity for the commission itself to discuss the case with our advisory staff. With that, Commissioner Kalk, this is in your portfolio. I don't know if you have any opening comments, or Kevin, if you have any after that, but
sure,
we can dive right into it and go from there.
The only comments I would have, I guess, is that we had four days of full hearings, and I guess setting the expectation that, you know, this first work session, just trying to like to get the, you know, work kind of where we're at a little bit on this and get a lot of feedback from some of the legal folks that, because reading through all this paperwork, there's a lot of questions that I had that go right back to legal right off the bat. But setting the stage that we spent 4 days of testimony and just make a little progress each one of these work sessions.
Kevin?
Well, in addition to the 4 days, I mean, there's just a pile of information. Although I have read all the briefs and reply briefs quite thoroughly, and I, like Brian, clearly there's a heavy burden or load on legal here to help us sort through some of the issues, even though I don't think there are a ton of issues, and maybe today we could sort of lay out the 3, 4, 5 that, you know, we need to dig into. But there's clearly a lot of reference to case law, which I think, you know, may require some research or some, you know, insight from legal. You know, even frankly, I mean, we might need, as weird as this seems, a little bit of a primer on exactly what to do, because, you know, footnote 1 of the MDU reply brief is, you know, spells out the responsibility of advocates as being not to be adversarial, but somehow to just, you know, to help assist, almost like advisors to the commission. And that's certainly different. First of all, it's different than what was done, and it's certainly different than what has been practiced, at least since I've been on the commission. And frankly, I find it's pretty fundamental that we sort that out, because to be honest, my read of most of the company's arguments is that we do whatever we want, it's up to someone else to prove that we're wrong, and frankly, don't question it, but help the commission come to, you know, our conclusion, to put it in really simple terms, is how I sort of read through it over and over and over again, including this issue of the shifting burdens, which presumes the first fact is true. So I think Brian, I think you're right that there's some questions of law that we'll need to have answered as well.
Well, maybe for this work session, what we need to do is, what I propose is that we come up with a list of, here are the decision points that need to be made, basically. And if we can scope those out, that would be good progress for today.
I think so, too.
And we don't need to come to any conclusions on those today, but if we at least get a list, then we've defined the bookends, basically, of what were the issues that we're going to be dealing with. And at that point, then, at our next session, we can start to work down that list and just go point by point by point. And, you know, maybe we can even at this session give some direction to staff if there are specific things in the record that we want dug out or legal questions that we want answered, then we can have them start to work on that. Some of the decision points may come fairly easily. Some might be a little more difficult, and then we'll have something to work from. So, how do we want to dig into it.
Well, maybe too, just the, you know, we've all shared our three thoughts, but, you know, the folks also here at the table sat through the whole hearing. If there's something that you think that we should start off with, some based on your experiences on these things too, I'd be interested to hear that.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, and just so that we all remember, we have available for advisors the three of you, is that right? And anybody? Jerry hasn't been designated.
Okay.
So in theory, Jerry, and Chris too has not been designated. So, yeah. All right. We've got lots of people to dig into this.
Yeah. Good. I don't know, Ilana. I mean, what would your observations be in terms of priority issues or specific issues we should focus on?
Go ahead. Pat? You're ready. Yeah.
If you're talking about decision points,
yes.
We have a settlement of some of the issues that was filed early on. We have an amendment to that, an addition to that in the form of a second settlement. We have two wind farms, Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow, and we have incentive compensation issue. And we have directors' fees, directors' compensation issue.
There's actually, I think, a pretty good list in the settlement itself of,
yeah,
isn't there? I believe that's where it's located. Of the,
yeah, I think you're right.
Of the, you know, here are the outstanding issues. If somebody has that handy, that might be the way to do it. I'm sure I can dig it out of here if I.
I do have a settlement agreement right here. Resolved issues, and then
I seem to recall even like a chart in there.
Issues to be addressed.
I think it's worth putting sub-issues under the two wind farms.
Yeah, I agree.
And if so, how much?
Well, yes, right.
Well, and you've got two different wind farms too.
Yes.
So I mean, you've got.
Oh, they're in. They're
Cedar
very.
Cedar Hills, Diamond Willow, and then sub issues under each of those.
Yes.
Some will be the same, but
they're very
all.
Distinct, though.
So I would break that out.
Absolutely.
Like that.
How do you gentlemen want to approach the whole discussion of? One of the things I struggled with in the whole hearing was, okay, the how they got to the wind is the lowest cost, and that was the right decision to make too. I mean.
Really.
That just seemed like that went around and around and around for the whole 4 days.
Yeah, I have a pretty specific view on it myself right now, but, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, my overview thought is...
It's easy to come to one view.
Right. My overview thought is that MDU would have done itself well to have run the numbers and had it in available for the commission so that even if it wasn't least cost, we could take a look at it, and you might take other factors into consideration. You might say, well, diversity has an interest, so you include this. But not providing that set of data was not helpful.
Well, then I think we all three see that pretty much the same way.
Maybe even fatal. Yeah.
That's a big point, though, I think.
Okay, so directors...
It's more about... Yeah, I mean, it's bigger than the issues at stake here. It's about accountability to the regulatory commission that you have to provide it with information
but
to make a
choice.
But
that theme seemed to weave itself through several different issues, in my opinion, not just that one.
No question. Okay.
Do we have anybody on phone?
Mike is listening on phone.
Okay. Yeah, I should have announced that, too. Mike Diller is with us via phone.
And he was an advocate.
Okay, Pat, what else did you have that you wanted to go on through?
I just wanted to list those.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, which do you want to tackle?
There are... And this isn't really a decision point. If we decide to accept those parts that were settled... There are still things that you could comment on within the settlement to provide guidance for future settlements. It wouldn't change the terms of it, but we may want to do that. One of those would be, for example, the rate, the ROE discussion.
Yeah.
And if we can give some thinking in our order, again, even if we adopt the settlement, it might help future rate cases sort of understand the commission's thinking.
Well, and ROE,
have some definite thoughts
I do too, Tony, and ROE is one of those things that that has become a tradition to settle early, due in no small part to the fact that we have limited funds with which to do these cases, and so that's an area that if you're going to hire an ROE expert, you're going to spend some money that we probably don't have, and that's almost never a priority. But you're right, that's worth discussion.
This notion that it's like Lake Wobegon and all the children are above average risk.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, at a certain point you have to, I think, address some things on a record that a witness has where you just say, no, this is not.
Well,
and maybe then in the next case you get it better.
At least every so many years it
right.
would help to have that
done.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Were there some others that you wanted to identify right away? We can keep the notes as we go forward.
No, not for me.
I think there was
okay.
Just that general theme, I think, of the legal interpretation of the things that we heard as it goes back to it's all or none, or is there something in the middle in a legal basis that you could get to and defend legally? If we
all of the above.
Yeah. Well, including
the problem. If you get to a middle ground in the order, it's
get too distracted,
right?
Because everybody's arguments are right. There, that's you look, you know, you read the case. That's what it says, and it's playing it out and applying it to what you're doing, which we will work through here little by little.
But if everyone, I don't know that I take the premise that everyone's arguments are right.
I mean, everybody's legal arguments in here.
But if they're not backed by some data, some facts, some legal standing, that's something that I would like to hear from you. Because, sure, they all sound good up here, but if they're not able to be backed up by...
They might be more right than others.
But
exactly.
Some of it gets back to the decision-maker's judgment of the evidence.
Based on what?
And then look at this shifting of the burden of burden of proof. And I've been printing the cases, and you might want to read a couple, so there's one set, and you can borrow it. But like the Helbling case, where the court talks about... talks about that allocating the burden of proof is a question of law, and so that who's got what part when. Mm-hmm. But if you read it, you know, the wife was supposed to be, like, proving a negative, and that's what was wrong with what the lower court did. And if you read through with a totally different subject matter, like a divorce or custody or whatever it was, you can get a feel for that. But some of that comes to your judgment on the facts. If you... can believe, if there's no facts on the other side, and you can believe, it's reasonable to believe the facts that were presented, then, yes, it probably does shift to the other side.
Yes.
Okay? Now, if you don't believe, I mean, if you don't believe them because they're not credible, you know, the burden of convincing or the risk of not convincing always stays with that applicant.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, so you can't really say this argument's right, that argument's right. They're both right. It's how the facts play into it.
Well, and that's, yes, thank you, because that's exactly where I don't believe that the initial fact in some of these decision points was established enough that it was somebody, that the burden shifted to somebody else to disprove or to prove their facts.
And that's your
that's
place
my,
to make. That's
right,
your
okay.
decision to make. And if you think back to that Southart summary judgment discussion, it's a different legal, slightly different legal standard because the way you get there is different, but it's that same question of, okay, here's this, and if this is true and I believe it, then that's the answer.
Yes.
Okay, and if not...
It's proven otherwise.
Yeah. So we'll have to go through those, I think, little by little, and I am not totally finished with these cases. There's some that we don't get on our Westlaw subscription, and I'll have to go down to the law library to look at them. And they're not all totally on point, but there's some that are very good. And there's another old case, but it's still good law, about if there is credible evidence, then you can't deny. I mean, you can't just say, and there again, the judgment call of the century is, you know, credible evidence. And will that court substitute a judgment for you? You say, I don't believe it. They say, well, a reasonable person, a reasonable commissioner would have believed it. But there's a couple of good statements that will help you, I think, play that out if you want to borrow these. And they're highlighted, so I don't know that you have to read the whole thing.
Hmm. Okay, that's good. It is good.
Yeah. If I wanted to read whole cases, I would have gone to law school.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I don't think I ever saw that law review with your article in it.
Really?
Yeah, I got extra law reviews.
I got extra copies.
You had a book signing right out here. Yeah.
Somebody must have tossed mine in the trash before it got to my calendar.
Give you a copy. Got a bunch of extra. Everybody on staff can have one. They'll do tests.
But I think that would be helpful if the discussion you just had, lay that.
Make an outline or something.
Underneath all of these issues that we just talked about.
Okay.
And then we could look at that. That would go a long ways for me.
Well, then let me ask one other question along those lines, Alana, and I think I know the answer to this, but let's carry out. Brian raised the point that if perhaps some but not all of a particular cost should be recovered by North Dakota ratepayers, and whose job is it to determine that increment if the information wasn't provided? And can we say, well, maybe, but we don't know enough, and therefore, you know, bring us more information.
Yes.
And
yes,
I think
exactly.
That's always an option.
Point,
because that's always the regulator's prerogative. And I,
and
good, bad, or indifferent, I think, to, say, Minnesota and the Big Stone case, right? When they reached a sticking point where the commission couldn't make a decision, they ordered it returned. They had a separate review. Now, would they have the ability to, I think, hire like a separate analyst who then, on behalf of the commission, went in and analyzed the data again and got back to them? I think you've always got that prerogative. Need to provide more information. Yes or no.
And the corollary to that is what's in one of these cases. You can't just pick the number. If you don't have it, and you don't have anything on the other side that says it should be half, I mean, that proves
right.
It should be half, you can't just pick the number.
Yeah.
There's a FERC case
or an FCC. I can't remember. This has been several years since I read it. But I think it was FCC, and they got overturned on something. And the court talked about you can't rely on the Goldilocks principle, right? You can't say, well, this is too much and this is too little, so I'll just pick something that sounds just right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to have something that actually, in the record, supports that that's
right.
The right number. You can't just.
But that was go back to, I don't see how both sides can be right when they're so far apart. It just doesn't, something's not computing there.
Well, I was talking about the legal arguments.
Yeah.
Because they're the consequence.
But the legal arguments,
of the legal arguments is all the
data.
Facts.
All right,
you can have the right answer to a wrong question.
Okay. So if you focus on the legal argument based on what they're talking about. Back to your point. Okay.
Okay, do you want to, Pat, what?
I'm just thinking, okay.
So what?
You have superheroes,
okay.
Yeah.
Is there some initial evidence that all three commissioners agree on one of these issues?
Well, let me throw one out.
All of them agree that it was incredible.
On a particular decision point. I think Cedar Hills being built in North Dakota, regardless of whether they asked for and received an ADP, this is our opportunity to have that prudency discussion, is very difficult for the advocates to dismiss. I look at Cedar Hills, I look at state law, I look at the objective, I look at everything and find it, I would think it would be very difficult for us to not allow recovery.
And I think the CPCN isn't necessarily controlling, but it has more weight than.
Well, it's us sending a signal.
You know, in the past, given it,
yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, we sort of pass these things through, and the CPCN still has weight. It still has meaning. When you read the text of that law, it's still a big deal.
So, I mean, if that helps, if you're looking for that kind of information, that's what.
Right. And then the follow-up on that. just one question follow-up. Is CPCN something that you mentioned things that you want to talk about in the rate case to give guidance for the future? Is that one of them?
You sort of opine on the nature of the CPCN? I don't know. I don't know that we need to speak to that. I think you can just get yourself in more trouble than not if you do that, because you don't know what future circumstances might mean. But the statute is pretty clear itself to me. It carries more weight. And I just didn't buy the advocate argument that, the CPCN is just a convenience that we, just to facilitate the utilities business. No, it...
We may have treated it like that a time or two in error, but I think this case speaks to CPCN.
I wouldn't want to dismiss it because that's a powerful tool for the commission in other cases if we want it to be.
I agree.
That is our need process. That is what we, that's the one area when we can assess need.
Yep. And we probably need to be more rigorous about review of them, of the applications in the
future. And you want to talk about whether it's equivalent to prudence?
No. I don't want to do that. Because they're different. I mean, and I can make the case for how they're different, but we don't need to.
We don't need to. That's why I say Cedar Hills being built in North Dakota is a compelling fact.
Right. Now, and then in so doing that, then we don't need to get into the question where I think MDU is wrong. I don't know if we want to opine on this or not. We might just leave it silent because we're deciding it on other issues. But this presumption that if it's built in state, the AD, having that one little thing embedded within the ADP, I thought there
was... Yeah, I think it's totally incorrect as well, but I don't know that it's necessary in this.
But if we shouldn't. And I think maybe we, just so that it's clear, if this ever becomes later on, I think that we can have a paragraph in the order that says, because the commission is deciding it on this, we don't need to answer the question about this.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Gives you more options, don't it?
Right. Just so somebody down the road says, well, in this you decided, and that was part of the case, so it clearly must have been part of your thinking. We want to delineate that we're not using that as a basis of...
Right. I agree.
In fact, maybe that's the way you put it. Rather than saying we aren't deciding it, we're saying we're not using this as a basis.
Brian, do you see anything different in terms of Cedar Hills? Is there any?
No, I like the idea of the disclaimer, though. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I have to. If you're looking for direction on different things, to me, the incentive compensation and the board of directors, to me, that fell within management discretion. Personally didn't want to dig into that, but the other folks feel like it.
Was there some
meaning? Looking at me like you're not sure.
Well
meaning like I
well, because there was
I
a
agree.
Settlement.
Ratepayers pay for it, or management discretion and ratepayers don't pay for it?
No. Oh, meaning the ratepayers would pay for it. That it's, to me, the way to make that particular case is if there was some outcome that was, if there was some performance goal that wasn't being met by the utility, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that there was some failure of the company in providing its service that you could link to how it was operating its incentive compensation plans, its performance plans, all of those kind of things, then you could make the case that the commission needs to sort of dig in and see what's going on wrong with how they've structured their company personnel, matters. But barring that link, to me, that's within a company's purview, right? I mean, the goal is always we don't run utility companies. We just make sure that they're providing service at a reasonable rate, reliable, and all those things. Now, if you had some suggestion that the manner in which MDU is providing service was insufficient, if you could prove that, then there was some insufficiency there, and then it's linked to how they've structured their personnel matters, I think then the commission would be well within its authority to go in and
start
tinkering
discussion?
Around. But I worry that it just kind of the idea that, well, we don't like the
compensation. Right.
And, I mean, to me, that's us getting into the business of running utilities, and I just don't like it.
What about the discussion of the how they got to that, the different formulas, so much for safety, so much for this, so much for that? Did you have any thoughts about that? Because that got really...
Well, I think
I don't disagree with what you're saying in the end, but maybe in that middle part, it just got very blurred. It's like, listen, I trust you guys to do the right thing, and yeah. I didn't need all that.
I'd almost put it in like dicta. It's like if there's something that we see that isn't... It's more like you might look at this, folks, that, you know...
The same kind of caveat that we used before.
You're waiting too much.
The trouble
is
we don't have that document in the record.
Yeah.
It could have been in the record as a trade secret, and we don't have it.
Oh.
And so we just have this opinion and that opinion kind of on it.
Yeah.
I think that's the one.
My sense of that whole discussion was that while there was an argument that we don't know enough about incentive and whatnot, either we agree with the compensation number or we don't, how it's distributed within that is sort of not our business.
Yeah, no. I mean, what I care about is the final number. Okay?
Right.
I want them to be compensating their employees in a way that's
competitive.
And it's competitive. It's not the best in the business. It's not the worst in the business. And that seemed to be what all the evidence, even the advocates, seemed to indicate. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the total compensation wasn't out of line. Now, how they arrive at that within that is not as big a deal to me, unless the performance of the utility is negatively affected because of how they've structured it. And I didn't see that there.
No, we looked into, I mean, we dug in a little bit to potential for perverse, you know, incentives and whatnot. And
right.
But then use the same kind of discussion there that.
And if you had an incentive built in that was like clearly driving a utility in a way that you thought was contrary to public policy,
or even safety.
Or safety.
Yeah,
which
is the most common.
Right.
Yeah.
Then that would be something different. But I didn't get that here. It was more like, well, it was more of a smell test kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was a worthy discussion.
Oh, yeah.
So do you apply the same thing to director compensation then?
Do I have the same theory on director?
Well, it wouldn't be.
No, I mean, it'd be a different theory. It was such a small
as it should be
number. I mean, it was
as it should be.
Yeah, it wasn't a high dollar thing. I don't know. Board of directors should be compensated, right? I mean, if we.
As long as not allocated a greater weight compared to the responsibility to the overall. That they're directing,
yeah.
I guess would be the only concern.
Do we leave that one open?
I think so.
I think we should do a little more research.
Because I think your point, which was I was thinking of, is how they get to that mix of what's the right amount spread mm-hmm. across the board. That part I was a little uncomfortable with that discussion and maybe spend some more time flushing that out.
Okay, can I bring up another one then that'll be less? That would be Diamond Willow. And I'll just tell you flat out my view of it. First of all, this gets back to the shifting burden. I don't think it is advocates or anybody else's job to come up with the portion of a cost without the information that should be supplied by the company to determine what that portion is. And short of that, I think the answer is no. But I would even go further. Frankly, I think the evidence is overwhelming to me that Diamond Willow was built exclusively and specifically to meet the Montana mandate. I think it's clear in the request for proposals. I think it's clear in Andrea Stomberg's testimony. I think it is clear. I think it's just irrefutable, frankly. And I think that before they ask North Dakotans to pay for a penny of it, they ought to ask for Montanans to pay for all of it. It's to me, it was just not even, you know, that was pretty clear. Both evidence. So, and unless somebody can talk me into something different, that's how I feel about Diamond Willow.
So tell us what you really think. No, but I mean, I guess my thought was is that I don't disagree with the word you're saying, But I'd like to be able to find if there's something in the middle there that the legal could break out that we could say, what is that? Like Tony was using the Goldilocks thing, because there may be some value to North Dakota customers for that. But there's no way to prove or disprove that. So if I was asked to make a decision today, I would agree with you 100%. Yeah.
Well, used and useful, I think, is a hard thing to dispute. I mean, if it's generating electricity, but then you could go build a nuclear plant, you know, without anybody's permission, it can generate electricity.
What about the Big Stone analysis that wind, you know, wind is close, you know, because we
when
even
forced into the formula, yeah.
Exactly, except we did that when we did the Big Stone order. We went through some pains to make sure that wind that was close with the gas backup or whatever was or wasn't, you know, better than coal. I mean, and they bring that up. Now, I don't know. I have to go back and see how much of that is really in the record. I mean, you can take judicial notice of anything you want, but judicial notice just means you don't have to get a witness up there. It doesn't mean you can take it without it being in the record.
Yeah.
But they bring it, they reference it.
I can't remember exactly our Big Stone order.
We should look. I mean, but they bring that argument up. Yeah. Which that just to me was one of the things that brought it, like, yes, maybe we did this and that with the RFP and da 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 da, but big scheme of thing, the wind was still always like a good idea. So
best argument that could be made to refute Kevin's, and if we're for the sake of fleshing things out, would be, yep, the impetus for it was Montana mandates. I mean, I think that was clear. I mean, it's hard to refute that it was anything but that mandate that caused that to be selected, that caused it to be built, that pushed them in that direction. But even if that's the case, apart from the fact that that's what made us do it, it was the right thing to do anyway. I mean, here's how the system is benefiting, and here's how it diversifies our portfolio, and I think that's, they didn't quite make the case that way. They tried to argue that it really wasn't the mandate too, but I mean, I think you're right. It's clear it was. And so the next best argument they could make, if you were looking for the kind of devil's advocate, would be, but even so, it was a prudent investment, and here's why. Just coincidentally, what happens in all of these cases where there's questions about one state pushing into another is, yeah, even though the Minnesota legislature says we have to do this, it was the right decision anyway.
But then we set the stage for more of this to happen, and
we do. And the other thing I would say is this is where, in my view, the company was negligent in not coming to us for an ADP. I mean, this is exactly why the ADP law was supposedly passed at the encouragement of this company's lobbyist, in case we forget. And now...
We all forgot except you. I mean,
no,
I...
Actually,
did.
We... No. Yeah, you may have, but there's a very clear record.
I know.
And so that's a... You know, I don't know how you. That would have been the appropriate thing to do, wouldn't it?
But that's kind of the legal thing of what Kevin just said, is that if we get to the point where we don't allow this because of this, this, and this, your legal interpretation of that, that's something that would be very helpful as we lay out. Because it's funny how we started out with some broad issues. Now we'll be done here by 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be that
hard. There's no legal question there. There's no legal question. ADP is permissive, not mandatory. Mm-hmm. And Kevin is saying they should have, because of this underlying situation about Montana. Factually, they should have done this, not they must do this.
They must if they want us to look at it ahead of time.
It's more of a guidance.
They can come in other ways and look at it ahead of time.
You fight so hard to say you've got to have this ADP so you can do just the things that are happening now. It doesn't wash.
It gets
whatever. Those are all, I mean,
right.
I don't need to spend time on that. Yeah,
right.
I mean, I don't need to at this point.
Right.
Like falling over out of my chair here. I do have a question for Pat.
Mark,
not a good way. Not, yeah, yeah. I have a question because, okay, all of the IRPs, I think, or a whole slew of them, are moved into the record.
Yes, they are.
And this company is the only company under a mandate to do an IRP and submit it to the commission. which goes back to that old order, which we did retrieve during the hearing, and now it's buried in my file someplace, and we have to find it. But in the briefs, and again, I have not had time to go from the...
needs to IRP now.
Sort of like try and do a North Dakota version.
Yeah, that's right.
This is, you know, a 25-year requirement. And the briefs talk about that the IRP, again, similar to this Big Stone discussion, Dan's brief talks about the wind being close. Okay, coal's first, but we can't build coal, so wind's darn close and has these other benefits. But we need to look at those IRPs and see if that's really true, what they're asserting, and what that order requirement was. Because that could, I mean, there may be a chain there that we need to recognize. Yes.
So Chris has gone through a lot of IRPs. Is that something that you can jump in the fray here on this thing?
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, it's sort of meaningless, and it's sort of like very important. I mean, and I've been here too long. That's the problem. But that order requiring them to do an IRP was a very similar kind of a case where they had made some investment decisions, and the commission was like, now you're putting us in an awkward position because, yes, we know some of this is really good, and some of this we don't believe you necessarily made the right analysis before you did it. And so the commission said, that's it. You start making the right analysis. And they're under an obligation to do that. I mean, it could be as simple. That could be a very simple answer to this question. But we at least have to see how clear that mandate was, and then what their IRP, and then if their IRP says,
well, we know there's no, they've argued that they didn't need to do the economic analysis that the staff says.
Well, that's under the MDU's right on that. That's a legal issue. I'll give you my opinion on that. Economic analysis over under the objective statute is not a good argument, I don't think. But they are under. Okay.
But within the IRP.
The objective statute says to do the economic analysis,
yep. Okay.
Renewable objective,
right.
and that you still may have an obligation to do an economic analysis because it's the right thing to do, because you're under an order, whatever, but I don't think you can point to that statute as your basis for it. So, but that's an easy question. We don't even have to talk about that.
That cuts both ways because the utility was trying to use that
statute. As a basis, yes. I understand.
That's a weak statute.
Yeah, I think both of those, I don't think we waste time with them. But there might be something under the IRP and the order. I mean, Pat and I and Chris at least have to follow that road a little bit and see if it's helpful.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, go back to that old order because you're right. It might provide great guidance.
And then the IRPs themselves, which, I mean, I haven't gotten into them in that kind of detail. So, although I seem to think if they would have been helpful, MDU would have led us down that path in a simple way. So, but that's just me guessing.
Okay.
Okay, so it sounds like we've got more staff work to do on the issue of Diamond Willow and everything that's under that. I guess what I'd request is that for the next session we have we continue to need sort of the decision point matrix and have that well scoped out, especially under the Diamond Willow one. So you want to put a good deal of effort into that. Cedar Hills, you want to have it on there probably, but I don't know that you need to expend a lot of energy on it because it sounds like we have a general consensus on that. Incentive compensation is similar to Cedar Hills. It should be on there, but I don't know that you need to put a lot of effort into it, at least now. As part of the order writing, you'll need to. But board of director compensation, it sounds like we'll need some more work done on that.
Yes, and what do you need something found in the transcript or?
Just need to go back and read it some more and do some thinking on it. I don't know that there's great legal questions involved with it, and I don't know that there's a lot that you need to dig out of the record.
Okay.
I think it's just a matter of us
refreshing what the breakouts were by time. And
yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you?
Yeah,
anybody
agree.
Else feel like you need a lot more info on that? I don't. there's the issue of the settlement itself, whether we concur with that, and whether there's anything under that that we wish to speak to, even if adopted. And I think I heard ROE would be one, potentially. Yeah. I'm going to add one other issue that's not a, strictly speaking, a decision point, but is something that the commission might want to speak to in the order, and that is the issue of how do we expect the utility to communicate with the regulatory agency in the future. And this gets to the Mike's testimony about his frustration with the facilitation of communication. I think that's something that's worth at least a paragraph or two about, you know, this came up as an issue. It's not something that has a dollar value impact, but here's what we expect from all our utilities in.
I totally agree. I agree 100%.
Because, I mean, well, I did find it a little, I mean, I found it somewhat disturbing that the answer, and I don't know if it was directly after this or if it was at another point in the hearing, but it was, there was a discussion between you, Kevin, and Dan, and you were kind of reiterating some of these concerns, and the response basically was, well, you get more from us than you do from a co-op.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, that was very
telling.
It was
pathetic. It was what it was.
It was very, very telling to me, because if that's, I mean, that can't be the, that can't be the position of regulated utility companies. You may not like the law. You may not like how state law treats co-ops versus IOUs, but the minimum standard can't be the standard. If the culture within a company is, well, we're doing more than the co-op is, so be happy with it, that's not the right signal to be sending to the regulator.
Yeah.
And these orders are the time that we can lay out. Here's what the expectation is. So I think we do need a couple paragraphs on that.
Maybe an extension of that is the discussion about the bookkeeping and the way they there was changes that MDU agreed to on how they do their record keeping, their auditing, tracking of things. Where is that going to lay out again? Was that in the settlement or was that somewhere
else?
It
is.
I don't
remember. It is.
Some of it, a lot of it's in the settlement.
Yeah, it is. There may be additional
things. It wasn't real clear to me, though of what exactly they were going to do different, what was going to be the standard that they were.
I don't know. I thought that was that we are committed to working that out with staff. I don't
even even paying for a review of it.
Yeah, but it's a going. It was like it'll be fleshed out going forward.
Okay, but that's
bit.
But is that going forward now though? That's what I'm getting to is because it's they talked about we're going to do it, but
that it's going forward while this is pending. But I don't want to speak for the they're here.
Because I actually think it is.
Is it? Well, then good.
Yeah. But is that something that needs to get put in this that they have to then report back to this at some time? Because that was the part they agreed to. They agreed to talk. Right? That's fine. But there wasn't like an end date to where a year from now they're going to come back and let us know.
You know, the settlement was fairly specific, as I recall.
And I
mean, not completely specific, but fairly specific. In that.
I guess it was they agreed to work together, but it wasn't. There was no what's the deliverable at some point in time that we would go back and say it's yes, this is good, which then sets it up for the next rate case that. If we didn't agree with what they're doing now is good at the end of this rate case, we could go into the next rate case and not have the right basis where we started off from.
Well, regardless of whether it's in the settlement or not, it could be in the order. I mean, your expectation.
Well, that's right.
The deliverable and a time certain could be in the order.
So that's something that I'd like to put in there somewhere, too. Just then.
I want
to. That's back to your point. I'd forgotten about that.
Can I opine about something?
Go for it.
Asking permission for the first time.
yeah, when has that held you back
before? It must be I'm not well.
Must be a big opinion.
I'm not well. Well, no. This advocacy, staff and advocate or whatever, I mean, this has been the dilemma forever. And it is true that we are not, we have no consumer council, which truly has one mission, and that's to have lower rates. And if the state wanted that, we would have that, you know, state policy would do that. And what we try to do here and what I grew up in this office learning to do was advocating for the public interest, which can mean advocating to the nth degree for lower rates or for something else. But again, I don't think that you need to worry about the footnote or the argument or anything else. But if you keep this, I'm advocating for the public interest in mind, the issue of whether MDU was producing the information necessary for the litigation at an early enough point in time can be dealt with by advocates earlier, way earlier. And we're hoping that we finally develop a system with, we got two counsels on the NSP case, both litigation people, finally develop a system where it becomes more routine if there is an issue to handle it that way. If you do a data request and you get an answer back that's gibberish, and you say, could you please do it differently, and you get nothing or you get more gibberish, you bring that to the ALJ or you bring that to the commission.
Yep.
And you do it like 6 months ago so that I doubt that MDU is going to like violate a commission subpoena
yeah.
to produce such and such a spreadsheet. And it's too bad to have to force it that way, but it is certainly doable. And even Mike at the end, I heard him say, you know, I maybe should have made a motion to dismiss. And that's certainly a possibility. And I want you to kind of know that that's possible. And then that's what in legal, you know, we're talking about, that that's the way you handle this. If you have to, you hopefully don't. But if you do, you do it that way so it doesn't get to the end and have the situation we had in MDU.
No, I agree. The only area that I disagree with what you said is I don't know that those states that have, say, separate offices of consumer counsel, that it really should be any different. Okay, I mean, I think what in practice has happened with states that have offices of consumer counsel is in a sense a kind of a perversion of the process the way that it should happen, right? I mean, the consumer counsel really should be looking out for the public interest.
That's
but,
right.
Which is
yeah.
the same thing as what our advocacy
what we
staff
should
be looking
yes.
at. But what happens in almost inevitably in states that have separate offices of consumer counsel is it's not the public interest. It becomes the litigation stance, and it
yeah.
becomes, you know, how do you drive rates as low as you can almost to the exclusion of reliability, right? I mean, so it and I know in talking with commissioners in other states that have those, that's their frustration is that the office, when you have the Office of Consumer Counsel model and the utility model, they just end up such – different sides, you end up with a horrible record because there's literally nothing in the middle at all. And then sometimes they have their own advocacy staff, which is separate from the Office of Consumer Counsel, and they worry that the office that their own advocacy staff becomes almost like a second Office of Consumer Counsel. And there's nothing, you know, usable in the record. So it, yeah.
Well, in the long
run, it should be
yeah.
all the same. But
yeah, I agree.
We had this yesterday. Mark and I were talking about, because he came back from the seminar, and I just said, we're after the truth. I mean, staff's after the truth. If that happens to be exactly what the company asked for, and that truly is the truth, the believable, great. And if it's far away on the polar opposite, that's okay, too. But that's what staff's after.
But the thing that you always say, Ilana, is that the credibility of the person on the stand or the people making the application is relevant. And how we
that's
read,
right.
whether it's facial expressions, tone, right. or their lack of cooperation
that's right.
enters into the decision point. The other thing you know, I'd say about it, and I don't disagree with you at all, I think you're probably right on, and probably Mike and the advocates learned a lesson that – it seems that we learn pretty regularly around here, and it gets back to what I always say to the entities we regulate. If you like our level of regulation, don't take it for granted.
That's true.
But if you want to abuse a liberty that is given either as a matter of law or a matter of tradition, go ahead, and the next time it will be different. And I guess the next time it will be different.
And that's a good example for this case because
sure.
there is a tradition of working it out and getting along and believing that the company will produce what you ask for so that you have time to look at it.
You make your own bed.
Yeah.
All right. Patrick.
I remembered a couple of sub-issues.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, like how
did.
Much?
No.
We have to talk about that.
The rider, separate rider for
web. Oh, yeah. Right.
Well.
Right.
And how much? I mean, are you going to decide it later? Ask
yeah,
them
I mean, well, I mean, we've already... It sounds like going down the road of at least part of the wind will be
right.
Yes.
acceptable. So we may as well put it on there knowing that we'll have to cross
yep.
that. I And as much as I don't like the riders, the fact I do like getting those things off the books quick, because it's a different kind of investment with the
depreciation and everything.
With the depreciation and stimulus money and subsidies and all of that. I mean, it is a different creature, and so it's nice to get it taken care of and not have it embedded in rates for 20 years.
Because I made the comment a while ago about it.
I don't think it'll be 20 years. But.
Putting wind in the whole base rates is a good idea, but I don't think so anymore. I'm with you. The rider's got to be that way.
Well,
and in theory, I don't like it. I don't like treating wind separately. I'd rather have it all part of base. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons I don't like it. But there is like a practical reality that eventually hits you, which is that these things just have a different cost structure than every other.
Yeah.
So if we're playing that out one more step then to Cedar Hill's actual amounts, where are we with that sub issue?
Well, I guess it gets back to my original point. I don't see how we dissect Cedar Hills and differentiate, or, you know, I think whatever is in the record as the allocation of cost to North Dakota, I think we'd be hard pressed
70% or whatever.
I think we'd be hard pressed to carve any of that out. I don't know.
Well, I agree with that. There wasn't much debate there. I thought it was laid out pretty well.
I mean, the only debate the advocates made was this analysis debate,
right,
which I think
Alana
has pretty effectively
took care of.
A sub-issue that we'll need to deal with as well then is what to do with the racks, at least as I deal with Cedar Hills. I do think that if North Dakota accepts 70% of the cost of any of the projects, then 70% of the credits have to be allocated to the jurisdiction, too. You can't ship them across the border.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, even Cedar Hills, then, is a resource that is being used specifically to satisfy Montana and not North Dakota, and then it shouldn't be recovered.
You're right.
Great point.
The RECs follow the allocation. Otherwise, you can't have it both ways. Pat, there was another sub.
Do we need to speak to, in this case, how we expect those RECs to be handled? I mean, my guess is we may as well, so we don't have to deal with it later. And I think we just followed the NSP precedent. And
I agree.
Yeah. Any rate design sub-issues?
Well, do we want to, I mean, the one rate design issue that came up, and I think this was under rate design, was the Steffes stuff, right? I mean, they testified I need to go back and look more carefully at the rate design. I mean, let's put it down there. I need to think through if there's anything that we want to do with regard to that.
I guess when I was going through the hearing, my thought was, yes, I like the different rate designs, but how do you make it work out?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I do think the generically speaking, the electrothermal devices are pretty, I mean, it's interesting technology that may fit really, really well here, and I wouldn't mind any and all of our utilities being more kind of proactive about looking at ways that type of device can work in their system to shape load, especially given the amount of wind that's coming on the MISO system. And if you can buy wind when they're paying you to take it off the grid in the middle of the night when it's windy. You
pass that on. Yeah, I agree.
That's not specific stuff. That's storage devices.
Is that a sort of dicta paragraph of encouraging it?
Well, there was a settlement.
That would also fit into the encouragement on some of the how we deal with energy efficiency.
Right.
See, because I don't. Yeah, I don't like the idea of trying to give the company back X amount of dollars to do renewable projects, to design a rate that folks can then be competitive and go make your own projects, products to do those things.
I mean, and these are the kind of rate issues that can be dealt with in follow-up tariffs. I mean, if they get some great study, then they can, you know, do it. I know that at one point I asked about if they've looked at, you know, third-party efficiency, and it sounds like they have looked at. I'd be interested in maybe having them follow up with the commission and you know, provide an update on how that process is going. That's actually one of the more intriguing ways that I think is out there to encourage energy efficiency, is actually have a third-party vendor whose profit incentive is aligned with actually saving consumers money, and then you can actually identify a return to consumers and the company that's out trying to provide it on behalf of the utility has an incentive to do the right thing instead of so maybe it's a matter of just follow up with the commission and after 12 months and tell us how those discussions have gone.
So everybody's okay with the customer charge doubling or whatever it's doing?
Oh, yeah.
That issue was brought up by Jim.
It was. Well, I
need to think about that a little.
I mean, it's closer to what we've
always sort of
added, isn't it? Yeah.
That didn't strike me as a... I mean, it's money coming from somewhere to meet the needs. And I thought that gave them a little more certainty what they were trying to do.
Just bringing their actual cost closer to...
I mean, economically, it's sound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The record's quite
sound. Yeah, yeah.
Public reception, I said, might not be as well-received. But, I mean, you can explain it to people. We've done this before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Of utilities, and just explain to people that, well, the formula's changed, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're... end bill. Do we want anything in there on further reporting and encouragement on more time-sensitive rates? They don't really move in a meaningful way
It's a minor step.
But I tend to be kind of a fan of more price responsive demand.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to go the whole way with, you know, AMI and real time pricing.
Right.
But especially on the C&I customers, especially larger industrial customers, I'd like to encourage all of our utilities to do more demand responsive pricing in some form or another. And maybe we have that as another clause, and we did. We asked enough on the record.
We did, and the advocates pushed for more, and the result was the little bit they got. So, I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, I like that idea too.
Anything else we're forgetting, Pat? That you can think of?
Can't think of anything.
I think with Otter Tail, maybe it was with all the utilities, but it may have came out of rulemaking. I can't remember. But didn't we have a requirement the utilities periodically update us on status of smart grid efforts that they may be enacting?
Remember.
Does that sound familiar? I know we got some reports from the utilities. Does that sound familiar at all? I'm looking at Tammy now.
No, big unless stone. It was
what
one
did
of
that
those
come out of? Was it our PURPA investigation?
I thought it might have been one of those Jerry workshop
report things. Security ESIA.
If it is, that's the only place it would be. If it is,
I think it may have come out of there. But I remember getting some, and I think Otter Tail just like copied off what was in their annual report and sent it in. And
I think that
we want that or not?
We wanted to look at that before we. Maybe just to get a look at it, see what it was.
Was it Fortnightly that did the recent cover story on smart grid?
Smart grid at a crossroads.
Yeah, smart grid spin.
Their current issue.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
It is.
How the term has evolved.
Well, here's what's I don't know, I talked about this. It's more and more going to be, I think, about the system, utility system benefits and grid reliability and self-healing properties and things like that. Then it's going to be about consumer interface, because there's so much pushback right now. I mean, there in I think it's Marin County,
yes,
California. It's now a they've made it a misdemeanor to install a smart meter because they've
Come
got
on.
Some no because they've got some people worried about like EMF coming off the meter and brainwaves. I don't know. It's a California thing, but it's like if this if smart grid isn't going to work in Silicon Valley,
right.
right, where there should be the most
yeah, right.
sophisticated consumers who are open to that kind of thing, how is it going to work? In, and it's not going to work in Boulder, apparently, where you've got
God
this kind of, you know,
that bullet.
this, you know, environmental, you know, hip, chic crowd who's going to be all into it. How is it going to work in Bismarck, Fargo? So anyway, probably anyway. Yeah, this isn't.
We should make it part of our
case,
pie system, maybe. In, at least, I don't know if you need it in order. I don't know. I'm not uncomfortable with it.
But if we did anything on smart grid, I think it would just be like keep us informed on what your
sure.
current plans are. And
this has been one of the more productive hours we've spent.
Yeah.
Huh? Lately.
Came together quickly once we got to talk.
Well, yeah.
So should we, on Wednesday's meeting, schedule another one of these
yep.
down the road?
I think so.
Yeah. You put that for
put it
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
It sounds like you all have more than enough to keep you busy between now and then. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, the bill deadline has come and gone now, and we can get rid of a bunch of things.
Good.
Hopefully they'll start killing a bunch, won't they?
I did think of one thing. This is only about bills, but I'm just going to send a note to Sandy Tabor. But in that siting threshold bill, there should probably be an effective date that's not just a date, but specific.
Sure.
When I looked at that chart that we sent down the committee with those smaller ones, it's like we're going to have the issue if one is, you know,
one.
If they've leased the land for one, that it now is jurisdictional.
I see.
Do they have to get it cited or don't they?
I see.
If, you know.
You say effective August 1, 2011, or whatever the date is.
Well, yeah, we'd have to think it through, and I didn't come up with an idea, but it was kind of like if you really were doing, like, letters of intent a year ahead or something, you could just start there, and there'd be a few that would trickle in. But we had the same question come up when it changed down to 60, but we avoided it. But we're going to have to, like,
deal with that.
Seems
out.
To me if they haven't broken ground yet, they should be cited, even if they think they've done all kinds of work already, you know. So,
so we don't get a whole bunch of letters of intent the day after the session or the day after the vote and just try and sneak in under some sort of moil.
Yeah, so we'll think about it. And I was just going to write Sandy a note, but I thought I'd mention it to you in case somebody's
point.
Talking to you about
catch,
it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Is there anything else? Seeing none, we'll close the work session. Thank you.
So do we have another work session now on?
We do on
accounting.
That was canceled.
Accounting.
I thought it was, but it didn't get canceled off my calendar.
Yeah.
I got a cancellation notice, but it didn't get canceled off my calendar.
All right, well.
Scott, are we having a meeting or not?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, okay.
It was canceled. Apparently
one of them was, but I thought it was rescheduled for this time now.
Oh, okay. That may be.
Yeah, this is, it's different because we're not.
So.